So tonight I'm going to talk about a particular book. And I'm going to, let's see, hold on. I need to stop. I need to share screen to show you this. I think I've talked about this book before, Brené Brown, Atlas of the Heart. And it's an astonishing book in a number of ways. But what really intrigues me is that at the end of it, she has what she calls her theory of cultivating meaningful relationships. And so over the next 3 Dharma talks, I'm going to be talking about this theory of cultivating meaningful relationships from Brené Brown. And the 3 components of this are grounded confidence, courage to walk alongside, and story stewardship. So I'll be talking about each one of those. This week I'll be talking about grounded confidence. And she defines grounded confidence just as feeling embodied and connected to the self. And of course, this is important for meaningful human connections because we have to be connected to ourselves in order to connect authentically to anyone else. Brené Brown cites 5 qualities of grounded confidence. And in reflecting on her writings, I've added 3 more, which I think are implicit in her writings. The first, which is one of the ones I've added, is self-compassion. In order to arrive in ourselves, we have to love ourselves. We have to be gentle with ourselves. We have to forgive ourselves. We have to be so kind to ourselves. All growth and healing is really supported by self-acceptance. And of course, we can't love anyone else unless we love ourselves, you know. Self-compassion is also so important because it really, how can I say, it provides a healthy corrective to all the other high ideals that are associated with this. I mean, yes, there are all kinds of high ideals in life, and it's important to be striving for these ideals. And it's important to remember that at any moment, with all our flaws, we are all 100% lovable exactly as we are, you know. And really to balance that, you know, being completely lovable as I am and striving for high ideals, that's an important balance to maintain. The second quality is self-honesty. This is also my phrasing. This is not her phrasing, although it's implicit in what she wrote. Self-honesty. And I'll say about honesty, I think about honesty as having 3 levels. The first level, which is very much present in this highly verbal culture, is just factual truth-telling, you know. I'm speaking words that represent what actually happened, you know. And I would call that the kiddie level of honesty, you know, in the sense that it's what we teach children, you know. And, you know, that not to say it's unimportant. There's a lot of things we teach children that are important to remember in adulthood, you know. But it's a relatively simple form of honesty. The second level of honesty, which is a much more adult level of honesty, is being honest from vulnerability. And this would come primarily in emotionally intimate relationships, in that raw moment, in a moment of human connection, you know, being able to speak my truth, being able to ask for what I need, you know, being able to assert that incredibly vulnerable thing in the moment, you know, that's a much more powerful level of honesty. And what I think of as the third level of honesty is about being honest with myself around difficult truths. Now, last week, the whole Dharma talk was about facing difficult truths. And basically, a truth is difficult because that truth is challenging either a long cherished illusion that is holding my life together, or, you know, a cherished story that I'm telling about myself that really isn't true, you know, something like this. And it's the paradox of life that often, at wherever we are in our growth process, often the next stage of growth, that it comes to us in the form of a difficult truth, you know. The next stage, you know, at any stage, the next thing we need to know is difficult. It's challenging, you know. You know, and similarly, the feedback from outside that could most benefit us is the feedback that often we least want to hear, you know, this kind of thing. So self-honesty, really being committed to self-honesty and working with those difficult-to-face truths. That's a second part of grounded confidence. Because the more I can face those in myself, the more I have a habit of facing those in myself, the less likely I'm going to be blown out by whatever anyone else says to me. The third, and this is Brené Brown's own phrasing, is humility. Humility is so important. And I've talked about humility before, and I always like to just point out we have distortions in this culture. People that think that humility means I have to put myself below everyone else, you know. That's not humility. That's really a distortion driven by shame. You know, and the truth is, whether I'm putting myself above everyone else or below everyone else, either way, I'm separating myself from everyone else, you know. And either one of those is going to make connection problematic because I'm separating myself from everyone else. Humility, the word actually comes from humus, ground. Humility is about putting myself on the ground, on the same level as everyone else, eye to eye with everyone else. True humility sets me up for connection, you know, opens me up to others. And I'll say also, I think it's just the nature of the personal growth process. Certainly it's been the nature of my own personal growth process that the more we see ourselves, you know, I've sat in meditation for years. I've seen all kinds of incredibly selfish parts of myself. I've seen incredibly self-involved parts of myself. I've seen, you know, parts of myself that could kill, parts of myself that could totally take advantage of others or exploit others in the most unfair ways. You know, I've seen all these faces of myself, you know. And it's hard for me to really judge that I'm better than anyone else, you know. Even if I see somebody else acting out one of those, well, I've seen that place within me, you know. There's something very humbling about just taking a good long look at yourself, you know. And so that, you know, the humility is really there, you know, it's not false humility at all. It's really genuine, you know. And again, all this sets us up. If I walk into a connection with somebody else from a humble place, then I'm willing to learn. I'm willing to grow. The fourth is curiosity. Now, curiosity is a wonderful trait in general, and it's a wonderful way to approach others. It's a wonderful way to approach the world. But curiosity is a particularly powerful tool to have in relation to ourselves. And the way I would frame it is curiosity is often what allows us to reclaim agency within ourselves, you know. So I might be stuck in some emotion. I might be sad or I might be angry, you know, and I could just be stuck in that place of cycling through that emotion. Or I can step back and be curious, you know, why am I having this emotion? Where is this coming from? How does this feel in my body? You know, being curious about our own selves and in particular being curious about the nature of our pain and the way that our pain is presenting you know, that can be very, very powerful. And it can be a kind of enlightening, a tool that adds an element of lightness to inner work, you know. And in many cases, it can be a way of reclaiming agency with respect to a strong emotion, just getting curious about it, you know. The fifth, and this is one that Brené Brown cites also, is courage. It takes tremendous courage to face ourselves, you know. And I know I've made this distinction before, but I always like to make the distinction between small-minded courage and large-hearted courage. Small-minded courage is I'm going to risk myself up to what I think my limits are, and then I'm going to stop. I'm not going to go past what I think my limits are. Large-hearted courage is just the recognition I probably don't know my own limits, you know. Large-hearted courage is just grounded in the recognition that all of us have more strength, more resilience than we can possibly imagine, you know? And so it's this willingness to throw myself into the conversation, throw myself into the inner conversation, you know, risk facing whatever it is that I'm going to face, ask the hard question, you know, all this stuff, not without any guarantee at the beginning, you know, just throw myself in and trust that I'll be able to deal with it as it arises, you know? And so courage is certainly important. And obviously, if I don't have that courage to engage with myself in that way, I'm not going to have that courage to engage with anyone else that way. So it's tremendously important to build this courage and to build this muscle of being able to take the risk, you know, without a net, as it were, you know, really dive into the risks of spiritual work. The next one, and this is one that I've added, but it's very much implicit in what Brené Brown was talking about, capacity. You know, everything that I've been talking about here, facing difficult truths, having humility, having courage, all this involves developing our capacity. You know, and I've talked a lot about capacity in the Dharma talk last week. All of us are responsible for how big our capacity is. All of us are responsible for working on our capacity. Obviously, the larger my own capacity is, the more I can face in myself and the more I can face in someone else, you know. And I think we underestimate how much of a gift I'm giving myself and everyone around me when I'm doing the work of expanding my capacity, you know. Capacity is so important. The next one, and this is Brené Brown's phrasing, and I love it. Rumbling with vulnerability is the way she phrases it. You know? And I think, you know, it's so funny in this culture. I think there's some people that have a tendency to, as it were, tiptoe with vulnerability, you know? Be very ginger, be very, you know, okay, this is vulnerable. I'm going to be very, very safe, very guarded, you know, this kind of thing. Rumbling with vulnerability, it almost has this air of, you know, the old Irish saying, is this a private fight or can anyone get involved? You know, it's really about like, let's dive in. Let's see how this feels, you know. Let's jump in and let's get our hands dirty, you know, all this stuff. There's something quite wonderful about that. And there's a devil may care kind of glee in that phrasing, rumbling with vulnerability, you know. And it's just a really good question for all of us, you know. What is our relationship with vulnerability, you know? Do I have to build a big fence around my vulnerability, you know? Or you know, can I have fun with my vulnerability, you know? Very good questions for all of us. The final quality that she talks about, the big C word, commitment. She phrases that as commitment to mastery. And it's so funny, and I've talked about this many times. We live in a society where we have astronomical expectations about what commitment is supposed to look like in a romantic relationship, but then ridiculously slipshod kinds of expectations when we start talking about commitment to ourselves, you know? And commitment is commitment, you know? We intuitively know in a romantic relationship that, you know, if two people are falling in love and they get to the point that they want to move to the next level, they want to express more love for each other, they want to say that it's going to be serious, the way they do that is they form a commitment. Like, we all get that, you know? So in the relationship with myself, how do I say that it's serious? You know, is my relationship with myself casual or is my relationship with myself serious? You know, and if it's serious, what kind of commitment do I have to myself? You know, and commitment, as always, commitment means every day without fail, even when we don't feel like it, even when it's the last thing that we want to do, you know, because it's the very unsexy truth of life that what shapes our life most profoundly is what we do every single day without fail. You know, the thought patterns we have, the emotion loops we go through, or the consciously chosen behaviors, the things we do every single day without fail, those have the deepest impact on our lives. And so that's what commitment is all about. Commitment is about being intentional about what's gonna have the deepest impact on our lives. And all these other qualities, you know, we build self-compassion, we support self-honesty, we nurture curiosity, we build courage and capacity, we build our ability to rumble with vulnerability if we're working on it every single day, you know. And of course, you know, how can I say, if I can't commit to myself, what makes me think I'm going to be able to commit to anyone else, you know? And similarly, if I don't value myself enough to commit myself, why should I expect anyone else to commit to me, you know? So commitment is so important, and it really is astonishing to me astonishing how unimportant self-commitment has become in modern society, you know. Self-commitment is everything, really. So I'm going to close with a quote. The quote's on the quote sheet, so I'll share the quote sheet. There's the quote sheet. And this quote by David White, which I think sums up grounded confidence in a wonderful way. The possibility of fulfilling the promise of our destiny and the sense of satisfaction involved may depend upon a brave participation, a willingness to hazard ourselves in a difficult world, a certain form of wild generosity with our gifts, a familiarity with our own depth, our own discovered surprising breath, and always a long practiced and robust vulnerability equal to what any future may offer. So the Sufi mystic Attar said, "The friend of God has these three qualities: generosity like that of the ocean, compassion like that of the sun, and humility like that of the earth." Of course, Thoreau says, "Go confidently in the direction of your dreams, live the life you've imagined, and as you simplify your life, the laws of the universe will be simpler." A couple from Richard Wilhelm's commentaries on the I Ching. The original impulses of the heart are always good, so that we may follow them confidently, assured of good fortune and achievement of our aims. He also said, when a person has learned within their heart what fear and trembling means, they are safeguarded against any terror produced by outside influences. This is the spirit that must animate all leaders and rulers, a profound inner seriousness from which all outer terrors glance off harmlessly. Helen Keller said, security is mostly a superstition. It does not exist in nature, nor do the children of humankind as a whole experience it. Avoiding danger is no safer in the long run than outright exposure. Life is either a daring adventure or nothing at all. The fearful are caught as often as the bold. D.H. Lawrence said quite simply, the only true aristocracy is that of consciousness. The Buddhist writer Wei Wuwei said, it is only with total humility and in the absolute stillness of the mind that we can know what indeed we are. A long one from Dag Hammarskjöld, who was Secretary General of the United Nations, incredibly wise man. To have humility is to experience reality, not in relation to ourselves, but in its sacred independence. It is to see, judge, and act from the point of rest in ourselves. Then how much disappears, and all that remains falls into place. In the point of rest, at the center of our being, we encounter a world where all things are at rest in the same way. The tree becomes a mystery, the cloud a revelation, and each man a cosmos of whose riches we can only catch glimpses. The life of simplicity is simple, but it opens us to a book in which we never get beyond the first syllable. And Mara Lindbergh said, only in growth, reform, and change, paradoxically enough, is true security to be found. Marie-Louise von Franz, who was a disciple of Carl Jung, said, the ego must be able to listen attentively and to give itself without any further designs or purpose to that inner urge toward growth. People living in cultures more securely rooted than our own have less trouble in understanding that it is necessary to give up the utilitarian attitude of conscious planning in order to make way for the inner growth of the personality. A couple from Thich Nhat Hanh, he said, I am determined to speak truthfully with words that inspire self-confidence, joy, and hope. That's an incredibly simple one, but an incredibly powerful one. Think about what it would mean if we were always speaking in a way that inspired confidence, joy, and hope. He also said, spiritual practice is not just sitting and meditating. Practice is looking, thinking, touching, drinking, eating, and talking. Every act, every breath, and every step can be practiced and can help us to become more ourselves. From the Jungian writer Marion Woodman, body work must be approached with the same respect and attentiveness that one gives to dreams. The body has a wisdom of its own. However slowly and securely that wisdom manifests, once it is experienced, it is a foundation, a basis of knowing that gives us confidence and total support to the ego. To reach its wisdom requires absolute concentration, dropping the mind into the body, breathing into whatever is ready to be released, and allowing the process of expression until the negative damned energy is out, making room for the positive energy, genuine light, to flood in. Ram Dass said, the art of life is to stay wide open and vulnerable, yet at the same time sit with the mystery and the awe and with the unbearable pain, just to be with it all. I've been growing into that wonderful catchphrase, be here now, for the last 40 years. Pema Chodron said, The reason we don't open our hearts and minds to other people is that they trigger confusion in us that we don't feel brave enough or sane enough to deal with. To the degree that we look clearly and compassionately at ourselves, we feel confident and fearless about looking into somebody else's eyes. Jack Kornfield said, "When we let go of the batters and open our hearts to things as they are, then we come to rest in the present moment. This is the beginning and end of spiritual practice." Judith Blackstone said quite simply, "Spiritual maturity is above all a process of becoming real." Paulo Coelho said, "Freedom is not the absence of commitment, but the ability to choose and to commit myself to what is best for me." Sharon Salzberg said, "If we fail, we don't need self-recriminations or blame or anger. We need a reawakening of our intention and a real willingness to commit, to be whole once again." Tara Brach, I love this quote. "If our hearts are ready for anything, we are free to be ourselves. There's room for the wildness of our animal selves, for intimacy and understanding, creativity and productivity. There's room for spirit, for the light of awareness to suffuse our moments. The Tibetans describe this confidence to be who we are as the lion's roar." Another quote from David White. This is from a webinar he gave during the pandemic. "When we're not living our own life, we tend to hold others around us to ransom. Quite often, one of the signatures of self-compassion, I often feel, is just letting yourself alone. Just letting yourself alone so you can let other people alone. If you've got other people by the collar, you almost always have yourself by the collar. Let yourself alone. Who would you be if you just let yourself alone for a moment? And part of letting ourselves alone is learning how to live in silence." Roy Bennett said, "What helps you persevere is your resilience and commitment." A quote from Brené Brown, she said, "Vulnerability is the birthplace of love, belonging, joy, courage, empathy, and creativity. It is a source of hope, empathy, accountability, and authenticity. If we want greater clarity in our purpose or deeper or more meaningful spiritual lives, vulnerability is the path." Three quotes from Risma Menakin. He said, "We think emotional nourishment comes from getting our needs met, but that's not how life works. Emotional nourishment comes from growing up. The quest for fulfilling our emotional needs can be endless. We get stuck on a hamster wheel, chasing one form of fulfillment after another. People who build their lives around meeting their emotional needs tend to be anxious, fearful, and frustrated. In contrast, the people who have accepted the clean pain of growing up have a relaxed readiness and an easy confidence about them. Their focus is not on acquiring fulfillment, but on being fully present. Because of that presence, whatever happens has the potential to be emotionally nourishing." He also said, "Life is always full of peril. But peril is not what we imagine it to be. We think that peril holds us back. When we hurt, we want to feel safer and more secure in order to be able to take a risk. But life doesn't operate that way. In fact, it's just the opposite. Safety and security and safety come after taking a risk, not before." And finally, he also said, "To me, self-discipline is self-love. Your ability to have some self-discipline around what it takes for you to have a sense that you are whole, good, and that you matter is about having the self-discipline to take care of yourself daily and giving yourself whatever you need consistently every day, even when you don't feel like it, to do that daily." And finally, a man about whom I could find almost no information, Earl Grey Stevens, said, Confidence, like art, never comes from having all the answers. It comes from being open to all the questions.